Since they fled their land and spread to many countries, the Armenians have tried to find justice. We ask Aram Arkun, who is an Armenian genocide scholar, to speak about their fight for survival as a people.
When the genocide took place, obviously it was something that was very widely known. It was widely reported in newspapers throughout the world. And Armenians themselves commemorated the genocide starting in 1919. They didn't call it genocide then because the word only was coined during World War II, but they commemorated in successive years up until the present. However, the first generation of survivors, those who usually had to flee the Ottoman Empire or the Republic of Turkey and ended up in all kinds of countries in the Middle East and the West, didn't really have the means to pursue the issue of recognition of the Armenian Genocide or to combat denial of this genocide. They were too busy just trying to survive, to make their living and to rebuild their broken families and lives. And so it really took until the 1960s for Armenians to really get back onto their feet. And meanwhile, the Turkish government initially completely avoided dealing with the issue or periodically intervened in certain cases where there would be attempts to bring this issue to a broader public. For example, there's the famous case of the MGM movie in the 1930s, 40 Days of Musaddao, that was squelched by a Turkish lobby. So by the 1960s, there was a lot of frustration and also, as I mentioned, a new generation of Armenians who are better off in different countries. And even in the remnants of historical Armenia, which was a part of the Soviet Union, there was a new generation that felt that 50 years had gone by 1965 and nothing had happened. There was no change in the situation. And practically throughout the world in that year, on the 50th anniversary, there were major demonstrations. And in Soviet Armenia, there were huge demonstrations in Yerevan that year that forced the communist government to permit the commemoration and eventual erection of monuments to its recognition. In France, in the United States, in Lebanon, and in many other parts of the Middle East. So it was nearly worldwide, in fact, except for Turkey, of course. We can say that this was a reawakening of the Armenian people, not that they had ever forgotten or gone to sleep, but perhaps instead of reawakening, let's say a re-energizing of the Armenian people to pursue this issue in a more vigorous fashion. And indeed, they did begin to pursue the issue more, and it was from the 60s on that Armenians began to erect monuments and began to try to pursue various political avenues of redress. And this led in turn to a stronger Turkish counter-reaction, a greater denial. Now, what happened is that the Armenians tried to introduce this issue to the UN and in other places, but were not successful. And meanwhile, by the 1970s, there was a lot of turmoil in the countries in the Middle East where Armenians were living. There was the Lebanese Civil War, and there was the invasion of Cyprus by Turkey in 1974. There was instability in Iran that eventually led to the Iranian Revolution. There was all kinds of turmoil that led Armenians, who were now second generation or even third generation, to feel that perhaps they were not as welcome as they thought in these countries that they had adopted as their new homes. They felt uncomfortable because of this. And there was also an effect due to the radicalization in countries in Western Europe like France because of the student movements in 1968 and the late 60s, and the United States because of the civil rights movement, the Vietnam War, and various other ethnic movements. All these changes affected Armenians too. And they were, in a sense, inspired or moved to rediscover their own identity. If the previous generation, to a certain extent, worked towards assimilation, worked towards blending in and just, you know, making their livelihood, this new generation felt more confident to be able to express their own voice as Armenians in whatever country they lived in. But those who were in countries of turmoil, like in the Middle East, faced particular problems that radicalized them very quickly. And this led to another stage of the Armenian struggle because, like many other oppressed peoples in the world, they didn't seem to have many other choices or ways to voice their opinions. And they chose something that at the time they thought was successful for groups like the Palestinians and the Irish, and that was the way of terrorism. And this was a very brief movement for the Armenians. It started basically in 1974 or 75 and lasted until 1983. And it was set off actually a year earlier in 73 when an elderly man who was a survivor himself of the Armenian Genocide, his name was Gurken Yanikyan, assassinated a Turkish official in San Francisco. He basically set off a movement. He wasn't the organizer of the two major groups that soon arose, but his example presumably helped give the idea to others, as well as I mentioned the examples of the radicalized movements of the Palestinians and others. And so Armenians formed two groups. The first one was called the Armenian Secret Army for the Liberation of Armenia, which was a Marxist group. It was actually supportive of the Soviet Union to a certain extent, of Soviet Armenia. And it wanted to both call the world's attention to the Armenian Genocide as well as to free the territories of Western Armenia, that is the territories that the Turks had occupied and are part of Turkey today. And this group actually worked very closely with some Palestinian radical groups and soon began a series of terrorist actions against Turkish officials. There was a second group that sprang up a few years later called the Justice Commandos of the Armenian Genocide. This group was affiliated with one of the older Armenian political parties, the Armenian Revolutionary Federation, and it became, in a sense, a rival to the first group. But both groups basically were doing the same kinds of actions and got a fair amount of publicity, so that in the initial years, this actually did succeed in drawing the world's attention again to this issue of the forgotten genocide. And newspapers like the New York Times in the United States and others throughout the world spent pages on the situation. But after a few years' time, there was a counter-reaction. On the one hand, many of the countries in which these acts had taken place began to crack down on the Armenians, and also this caused some difficulties even for Armenians who had nothing to do with these terrorist actions. And secondly, the media no longer gave as much coverage. They covered events themselves, but they didn't cover the background of the genocide, which is what really was part of the real goal. And thirdly, a third factor took place, that is a splintering of these groups for a variety of reasons internally and probably through some external deliberate attempts to destabilize them. This led to instability and weakened, in particular, the Asala, the Armenian Secret Army, to such a point where there were rival factions fighting each other. And by 1983, this was probably the last year in which these groups had any significant activity. And afterwards, for all these reasons, they basically stopped existing or stopped operating. Some of the members were also captured, actually, and forced by the Turks who captured them to make public confessions on television in Turkey. And also during one of the Israeli invasions of Lebanon, information was given by Israeli intelligence services to Turkish intelligence services, which allowed capturing important files and kind of weakening these organizations further. And then some of the European countries like France also cracked down on the operations of these forces in their own territory. So all of these things weakened these organizations. But in a way also the Western governments tried to channel Armenians' political activities into more, let's say, legal ways. So that's when the notion of having a political resolution in Congress arose in the United States. That's when the Armenian Assembly Organization, roughly a little bit earlier than that, got started. In some sense, if you look at it as the bad cop, good cop routine, they did allow other more moderate Armenians presumably to have certain opportunities that perhaps they wouldn't have had otherwise. Again, I wouldn't call them a major factor in the struggle for recognition of the Armenian Genocide, but certainly they did play a certain role that can't be ignored. And today, you know, this is, of course, now 20 or more years ago, and the activities of Armenians have entered into different stage. The Armenian organizations in various countries have been very active in the last 40, 50 years in trying to both persuade the governments of their host countries to acknowledge the Armenian Genocide. They've been active in terms of supporting academics who do research on this topic. They've also, you know, organized a lot of grassroots activities which have kept the issue alive. So Armenians published books, they organized rallies, they held memorial services, they entered sometimes into coalitions with other groups, whether they be Jewish groups, Cambodians, Rwandans, others commemorating their own genocides, whether they be other groups on the left in various leftist coalitions of Palestinians, and in Europe all kinds of different political parties that were supportive of the Armenian socialist and sometimes communist party. So it depended really on the local circumstances. circumstances and the politics of the situation, but Armenians always tried within those parameters in which they faced outside of Armenia proper to struggle. Recognition is a political process more than an academic one. There was sufficient information available, you know, 90 years ago. But what is different is that on the one hand, there are a lot more state archives that have become accessible. Those are archives of the powers that had diplomats or representatives in the Ottoman Empire in that period of the genocide. And they became accessible from sometime in the 1960s. And secondly, because there's more of a general interest in genocide in general, I would say that there are more non-Armenians now who are studying these issues, and that's a difference. Obviously, there were encounters between Turkish and Armenian academics much earlier than this modern period. And when we had these kinds of events, oftentimes they were very polemical and they didn't really serve very much to increase our knowledge of the events or to have some sort of mutual understanding of these events develop. That's changed a little bit now because there are a handful of Turkish academics who are willing to accept the events of 1915 as a genocide, or at least, even if they don't use the word genocide, they accepted the basic understanding of the events as genocide without using the actual word to avoid legal complications. And so that allows also for a new generation of younger scholars who are Turkish in background to become more curious and to explore issues connected with the Armenians. Again, sometimes cautiously approaching these things, but nonetheless, as they learn more, they become a little more confident in talking about it. And that's a positive thing, and that's opening the doors, I think, to greater understanding ultimately in Turkish civil society about the role of the Ottoman Empire and the early Turkish Republic in Armenian genocide and subsequent events. But it's a very slow process, one to be encouraged, but there's one other factor which complicates it, and that is that occasionally there are various state interests involved, including our own country's interests, that sometimes distorts this process, sometimes helps it. And that's because the United States would like to promote what it calls reconciliation in order to put aside this issue as an obstacle for American influence in Armenia and in the Caucasus. And it also wants to support Turkey's entry into the European Union. For a lot of reasons, then it wants to eliminate this issue, but it doesn't really care, as far as I can tell, exactly how it's eliminated. And so part of that process is to promote track to diplomacy as well as meetings of academics on these things. And so at times that makes it problematic how these meetings take place, but on the other hand, it does provide a good opportunity since some pressure is being brought to bear in various circles. It's an opportunity that didn't exist in the past, and as more and more Turks start to think about these issues and write about these, it'll be harder to force Turkish thought into a simple single mold.